The following is a special presentation of Alpha Media. Welcome to Beyond the Headlines. In-depth interviews on topics of concern here in Portland and the Northwest. Now, here's your host, Brett Recap.
Thank you very much. Welcome in. You have the 441st edition of Beyond the Headlines. A behind-the-scenes look at some of the stories making news here in the Pacific Northwest. We are rolling right through October 2022 on all seven of our Alpha Media Portland radio stations, including FM News 101. Boy, election season is in full gear. The big day is approaching Tuesday, November 8th. It's the midterms. America will vote. Last week on KXL, we brought you five more features in our 10-part series leading up to the election. So this week, we're doing it again. We have five brand new features on big races to bring you. And we're going to kick off this week with my morning partner, Veronica Carter, who went in-depth on Oregon's 5th Congressional District race between Jamie McLeod Skinner and Lori Chavez de Remer.
It's one of the most watched races on the ballot in Oregon. Skinner, a Democrat, beat the incumbent, Kurt Schrader, in the May primary. He'd been reelected by voters five times. The 5th District, which was redrawn after the 2020 census, stretches from Portland to Sun River in Deschutes County. McLeod Skinner is an attorney and part-time emergency preparedness coordinator, as well as a board member of the Jefferson County Education District. Chavez de Remer served as mayor of Happy Valley between 2010 and 2018. She and her husband co-founded Anesthesia Associates Northwest. They also own health and wellness clinics that treat drug-resistant depression. One of the hot-button issues for the two candidates has been abortion. McLeod Skinner says women's rights are being trampled.
I'm quite confident that next year there will be an abortion bill before Congress. And whether it is an outright ban or it is a restoration of our rights will depend on November, the election in November. In my case, I would advocate, co-sponsor, and help write the bill to codify our rights into law. I'm running against someone, unfortunately, who has made very clear she would vote for an outright ban nationwide that would even affect us here in Oregon.
Chavez de Remer tweeted that she would support a national heartbeat bill, but during an interview with KGW's Laurel Porter, she said she's not in favor of a national ban on abortions.
I would not support a ban in Congress at all, a federal ban. I think women should have access up until the first trimester.
During a forum hosted by the League of Women Voters, Chavez de Remer says her top priority is inflation.
But I think what's affecting us directly today, the inflation costs, and I think energy is tied to all of that. And what we're not seeing by Biden and Pelosi and the administration today is building the Keystone Pipeline that was held up and started by President Trump, and it's being held up now. We need to immediately start building back the Keystone Pipeline. We also need to start drilling more, let those licenses happen, and not with the royalty tax that they're talking about now, because that's only going to make inflation higher. We're seeing $5,000 a year more per family. I can't imagine what it can be like if you have to fill up your gas tank in order to do your job, and it's affecting our everyday businesses.
McLeod Skinner says she'll get the job done for Oregonians. She says she won't be a rubber stamp for the Democratic Party.
I don't believe that members of Congress should be able to trade stocks. That's a key issue. I think we should lower prescription drugs. We have Democrats have not been able to get that to move through the House. Yes, it did in the Inflation Reduction Act. It started that process with dropping the price of insulin. I think we've got members of Congress on both sides who are in the pockets of Big Pharma and other major corporations as well. So those are just two examples of areas we need to push the politics and actually get stuff done.
As for which way this election could go, either way, most polls say it's too close to call. Veronica Carter, FM News 101.
Too close is right. Thank you, Veronica, for bringing us the latest on the race on Oregon's 5th Congressional District. We move one district over now and check in with KXL's Grant MacHill, who's covering the 4th District race for Congress for Oregon between Val Hoyle and Alex Scarlatos.
It's a changing of the guard, with Congressman Peter DeFazio retiring after 36 years, and the two vying to replace him are well-known names. Democrat Val Hoyle is the state's labor commissioner and former House Majority Leader.
I'm running for Congress to represent the people of the 4th Congressional District because I believe that we've had a strong voice for the past 36 years fighting for these communities with Peter DeFazio, and I'd like to continue in that tradition.
And Republican Alex Scarlatos is a 29-year-old former Oregon National Guardsman congressman who became internationally famous when he helped to stop an attack on a Paris-bound train and then portrayed himself in a Clint Eastwood movie.
I will work on solutions to reduce inflation, lower gas prices, and bring some balance back to Washington. These extreme policies of the Biden administration have absolutely destroyed our economy. I think we need someone to represent the entire district.
Hoyle says it's because of her experience and relationships that she'll be able to hit the ground running.
In the first 100 days, I'll be very fortunate because I've worked so closely with Peter DeFazio and his team, and the transition will be pretty easy because he will leave that infrastructure. And again, I've been working very closely with people on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, Peter DeFazio's team, the president, and both of our senators on advocating for the container port in Coos Bay. That container to rail port will bring 9,000 jobs.
And Scarlato says he has clear priorities if he wins office.
Well, the first order of business is going to be getting our economy back on track, reducing inflation and gas prices, and then long-term reducing interest rates as well. Also, we are the poorest congressional district in the state of Oregon, so our overall economic health as a district is going to be a huge priority for me, not only in the first 100 days, but probably the first several years as well. Doing more energy exploration here in the United States, that will help us lower the rate of inflation.
But both agree that people in their district need help.
They're struggling because they're trying to afford gas and food and childcare and rent, housing. Those are the issues that I worked on in the legislature. Those are the issues I worked on as labor commissioner. Those are the things I will work on in Congress.
Could be doing a lot better by utilizing our coastal fishing areas, expanding the port of Coos Bay, proper forest management that creates jobs and brings money into county government. I'm going to work on solutions that reduce taxes and create good paying family wage jobs here in Oregon.
And they both believe that they are the right person for the job.
People should vote for me because I share the values of the people in this district. They're hardworking. They want someone that's going to stand up for working families, that will work to expand jobs. I have support from labor and business, from Democrats, independents, and Republicans across this district because they've seen me deliver.
Oregonians should vote for me because I'm always going to put the interests of our district first. I'm running for Congress because we're the poorest district in the state and we mismanage our forests. We are facing a lot of serious problems like this runaway inflation and interest rates. We need to lower gas prices and lower the cost of health care and create good paying jobs here in the district.
Grant McHill, FM News 101.
All right, Grant, appreciate you. From Oregon's 4th Congressional District to the 6th, we go, covering the race between Andrea Salinas and Mike Erickson.
Oregon's population grew by a staggering 10% between 2010 and 2020, one of the biggest increases in the U.S. And with that, a new congressional district was born, the Oregon 6th, notching itself right in between parts of what used to be the 1st and 5th District, thus creating a pretty diverse voting demographic, stretching from rural parts of Yamhill County into the Portland suburbs down to the Salem area. Plus, it has the largest Latino population of any Oregon congressional seat. Republican Mike Erickson is the founder and CEO of the supply chain company AFMS Logistics Management Group.
You know, as a business owner, you deal every day with problems that pop up, and whether it be rising health care costs or rising employee labor costs. I mean, no matter how you look at it, a business guy is out there working hard every day to keep his business afloat. And I think we need that mindset, that problem-solving mindset back in D.C. now more than ever.
Democrat Andrea Salinas represented the 38th District in the Oregon House of Representatives. She spoke with our news partner KGW's Laurel Porter.
State legislator who really, I think, tries to implement policies that affect lots of Oregonians, but in particular, I think, you know, the women in this district who really appreciate the fact that they can make their own health care decisions on reproductive health care, the fact that, you know, I helped to pass a paid family medical leave bill that, you know, allows people to take time off work when they have a sick loved one or need to bring home a newborn child.
Despite many attempts, the Salinas campaign never responded to KXL. Erickson shares his ideas to deal with the issue on everyone's mind, inflation, saying his experience in the supply chain industry will help.
And the price of trucking to go from Oregon here to the East Coast used to be about $2,000-$3,000. Now it's $6,000-$7,000, triple. Ocean container for when you order things from anywhere in Asia to the West Coast, it used to be $2,000-$3,000 for a container. Now it's like $13,000-$14,000 for the last couple of years. Those things are all being passed on to consumers.
As the country reels from another mass shooting, this time in St. Louis, Erickson believes there should be background checks, including monitoring those who post problematic things on social media. Beyond that, he believes in a tough-on-crime approach.
Preventing the criminals and people from getting guns by holding the criminals more accountable. If you commit a crime with a gun, make sure you fully serve your time and make the DAs and the judges hold those criminals accountable. Then people are going to think twice about going out and committing an armed robbery or a burglary with a gun.
Despite the region leaning heavily blue in the 2020 presidential election, President Joe Biden would have carried the district by a whopping 13 points. Experts now have the race between Salinas and Erickson as a toss-up.
I'm going to be a champion on reproductive rights. My opponents and you know, anti-choice with no exceptions. I'm going to be working hard on behalf of working families. He's a multimillionaire who works on behalf of corporations in the 1%.
Even here in my business, I have a lot of my employees are Democrats. A lot of my employees are Republicans. And we all work together to solve our clients' problems and our own internal problems here. I love the fact that we all work together and there is no partisan bickering here.
Zachary Barnes, FM News 101.
From Oregon to Southwest Washington now, a very big race that's getting a ton of national attention. In Washington's 3rd Congressional District, Republican Jamie Herrera Butler got primaried by Joe Kent. He's taking on Democrat Marie Glusenkamp-Perez. KXL's John Eric Smith reports.
The race has been called a microcosm of national politics, and it's gotten a lot of attention from out of state. I asked each candidate why they think the race has captured the nation's imagination.
I went against one of the Trumpetation voters. You know, I mean, going and trying to challenge a 12-year incumbent is usually not done. It's usually not successfully done. So, yeah, I mean, I think the topic of the day post Trump leaving the White House was impeachment and then what was going to be the fate of the 10 impeachment voters. And so we were part of that out here because Jamie Herrera Butler was one of the impeachment voters. I think that's probably the biggest reason why.
Well, I mean, how many people that fix cars for a living run for Congress? I mean, I think I have a pretty unique perspective on the world. And I think people are excited to hear somebody that, you know, thinks like them and lives like them talk about these issues in a real way. And so that's one reason. I mean, and it's also because my opponent has a massive Twitter following, and that's going to draw national attention.
Democrat Marie Glusenkamp-Perez and Republican Joe Kent do agree on some things. Namely, they both say inflation is the biggest issue facing Southwest Washington voters today. Kent thinks the first step in the inflation fight is at the gas pump.
Number one, we have to turn back on U.S. energy. Biden came in, he killed off Keystone XL. He stopped issuing exploratory drilling permits. Ever since then, the price of the pump has had no ceiling whatsoever. So number one is turn back on U.S. energy. Number two is good fiscal responsibility, like the so-called Inflation Reduction Act that my opponent fully endorses and said that she would sign off on. What does it do? It hires 87,000 more IRS agents to go after people making less than $100,000, and that's according to the Congressional Budget Office. It also puts new taxes on domestic energy production. My opponent is advocating for a hike in taxes for families making less than $150,000. These things right there, that those Democrat policies are going to continue this cycle of inflation.
While Glusenkamp-Perez thinks it starts with affordable housing.
If people can't buy a house, they're not saving for retirement, they're not able to borrow against the value of their house to start a small business. So it hurts entrepreneurship, it hurts small business growth, which is the backbone of our economy. Like, housing is really fundamental. And so the way that we address that, I mean, there are obvious problems with material shortages. Like, we've, largely shut the woods down. We have huge shortages in aggregate. There are basic supply chain problems that have escalated that need to be addressed through regulatory reform. I mean, the purpose of regulation is to increase housing supply, not stop it. And I think we've really lost the way on that.
Both candidates take pride in saying they go against the grain of their respective political parties. John Eric Smith, FM News 101.
Thank you, John Eric. And finally, for our 10-part KXL series, it's the big one. KXL's Annette Newell talking to all three candidates running for governor in Oregon about their ties to our state, their service to Oregon, and what they would like to do about homelessness.
Three women, each eager to orate her Oregon origin story.
I am a lifelong Oregonian. I'm a small town girl. I'm originally from Klamath Falls.
I had worked at Oregon Food Bank and Children First for Oregon. My job was to go to the legislature and talk about what people needed.
I grew up in Central Oregon. My father was in the timber business, and both my parents were heavily involved in issues of state-level interest.
It's never happened before, not in Oregon, or even in the whole country. three well-qualified women running to be the state's next governor. All three have won previous elections. Independent candidate Betsy Johnson
was elected three times to the Oregon House of Representatives. 10 days into my third term, the senator was appointed to a remunerative position. 23 county commissioners unanimously selected me to fill out her term. And then since 2005, I earned election.
Democratic candidate Tina Kotek
served 15 years in the Oregon House representing North and Northeast Portland. 9 years of that service was as the Speaker of the Oregon House. And for that job, I really believe I was serving the entire state. My job as Speaker was to make sure every House member, no matter where they live in the state, no matter who they represented, would be successful.
Republican candidate Christine Drazen.
I was able to work for Republicans who had majority control in the House and the Senate. You know, I was there about 8 years, but half of that time I was Chief of Staff to the House Majority Leader and then the Speaker of the House. I wanted to fight the fight on behalf of my community and work for my own constituents and my own part of the state, and made the decision to run for office.
Homelessness, houselessness, housing insecurity. What needs to be done that has not already been done? I know that you and the other lawmakers have been working on this crisis for a long time, but what else needs to be done to come up with some solutions here? Because the way people see it is we still go outside and we see our neighbors living on the streets still.
Yeah, I see it in my neighborhood in North Portland. It's not acceptable. It's a humanitarian crisis. I think we all agree on that, that that's not how people should be living. And I've been working hard as a House leader in the legislature to do something, but it's not been enough. For example, one of the things I worked on was something called Project Turnkey. Over the last 2 years, we've been working hard at the state to convert motels and hotel properties into transitional shelters. Because when someone's in a tent, you can get them into four walls and a locked door so they can feel more stable. That's when you can have better conversations about helping them get what they need and also get them into permanent housing. Project Turnkey ended up doing 19 new shelters in 13 counties. And only in 7 months, we increased shelter capacity by 20%. So those are the kind of things we need to do more of.
Homelessness and housing insecurity. We have seen so many different approaches tried and frankly failed on these issues over and over again. What do you propose to do differently?
A lot of what we have done recently should change our mindset about this problem. Just the state of Oregon has spent about $1.7 billion on a huge range of programs, funding for landlords or rent assistance or building tiny homes or Project Turnkey that transitioned underutilized motels into spaces for homeless populations. This is not just a simple housing first problem, but homelessness is really, it's a crisis of an individual. It's a human problem. There's a program that's been adopted in particular in Clackamas County and I believe Gresham, but it's called Built for Zero. The concept is one that identifies not a point in time count of homeless populations, which gets you, I think last time it was around 14,000 people statewide, but it gives you a real-time understanding of who is without housing and living on the streets in your region. You begin to treat it more like case management rather than an anonymous, faceless row of tents.
When it comes to homelessness, what else needs to be done? That seems to be the issue that comes up again and again with Oregon, as that's their most critical problem.
Well, because it's so obvious. Just go out on any street and you're going to see the tent. I think we've been doing an absolutely crappy job. We haven't used the power of law enforcement. There has been no sense of urgency about getting people off the streets. The Office of Homeless Services has purchased 6,000 tents and God knows how many tarps that now we're scraping off the street. The waste in that is just incalculable. We have not had a sense of urgency. On the day after the election, when I'm the governor, I'm going to convene the requisite people to talk about how do we instill a sense of urgency.
Betsy Johnson, Tina Kotek, and Christine Drazen are competing in a closely watched, tightly polled race for Oregon governor. Annette Newell, FM News 101.
And thank you, Annette. That's it for our 10 separate election in-depth reports. We have them all available at KXL.com. Reminder that you can count on KXL to be your voice this election season and stay connected to KXL's election night coverage coming up Tuesday night, November 8th, with Tim Lance and a team of experts and reporters covering all the angles and facts and results. You're listening to the 441st edition of Beyond the Headlines. I'm your host, Brett Recamp. Halloween is Monday. It's most certainly the right time of the year to talk about ghosts. This time, I mean real ghosts. Are they real? Absolutely they are, according to a lot of people, and the owner of Shadow Chasers, Mr. Kelly Bruck. Kelly's been chasing ghosts for a number of years now, where he lives in Redmond and all around Central Oregon and other parts of the state. He says he has documented plenty of them, even felt and communicated with ghosts in a number of ways. If you have any desire to visit with Kelly about ghosts, or if you have a ghost problem, just shoot him an email, kbruck13@gmail.com. That's kbruck13@gmail.com. KBRUCK13@gmail.com. Now, ahead of Halloween, here is my conversation with real-life ghost chaser Kelly Bruck.
Well, I kept seeing things happening around me, and I kept seeing the numbers. Numbers are a big thing to me. I kept seeing 1111, which to me I understood to be there's an angel on my shoulder, and I'm supposed to remember what's going on. And I kept seeing it 3 or 4 times a day, and finally I just told God, I said, okay, if this is what you want me to do, then I'm in. So I've been doing it ever since, and it's been freaky.
Okay, well, I thought of you as Halloween approaches, and I heard a couple of different ghost stories, so let's start big picture, Kelly, here. Are ghosts real?
Yes, they are. They are. There's a dimension. You know, I kind of see three dimensions when I've been ghost hunting. There's the ghosts that have crossed over. There's the ghosts that haven't crossed over and don't know they're dead yet. And there's ones that are here that are going to stay. Each ghost hunt I've ever done has been totally different. It's been like opening up a book and starting page one, you go to the end. And by the time you get to the end, it's like, everything is validated. Everything, you know, I've had people hear their loved ones' voices come through on the recorder and, you know, they just hit the floor, you know, it's like, I don't understand it. I tell people, you know, believe what you want to believe. I know what I see. It's been amazing. I mean, I've had a lot of family members go through me to them. You know, I had one time I had a 5-year-old girl that passed away that came to me. Said she was sick and looking for her family. And I told my angels around me, take her to the light. And 5 minutes later, he came across and she's gone. Pretty amazing.
A lot of examples. When you describe ghosts, how would you say is the best way to describe it in terms of us as humans and the physical earth that we live in? What's the best way to describe it? Because I know they can be picked up on certain instruments.
Right. There's, you know, the ghost hunts I've done, I've been hit by rocks. They'll throw them at me, let me know they're there. There's, you know, you could be sitting at home and put your keys down somewhere and you go back to the game and they're gone. You look through the whole house and you come back and they're sitting right where you thought you left them. You know, there's signs there that ghosts are letting you know that they're there and they want you to know they're there. You know, I've had people had their hair pulled. I've been touched. You know, there's so many ways that ghosts can let you know that they're there. You might walk by and not even notice.
So they're spirits, if I'm not mistaken, spirits or some kind of metaphysical makeup. How do they cross over into the physical world and move objects and touch people and make physical impacts?
Well, I'm not sure how they cross back over. That's part that I'm still learning part of this myself. And the things I've learned is every time, you know, I see something moved or something thrown at me, or I know they use a lot of energy, and I've had them use a lot of my equipment energy, and they'll burn it out quick. You know, batteries, they'll use your body energy. It takes a lot of energy for them ghosts to come through. You know, a lot of times it's kids. A lot of times I'll get kids messing with my equipment, you know, and I can always tell because they'll just start twitching things on and off. And you know, I had one poke me in the butt once, and he thought that was pretty funny. He came across and was laughing on my recorder. Just, you know, they don't know. Some of them don't know they're dead yet.
You said that right at the beginning, Kelly. Can you once again kind of describe those three types of ghosts, if you will?
Well, the ones that I've noticed that have crossed over, they come back and they want to let people know that they're okay and where they are. They're basically just validating that they did cross over and they're happy. I've done a house once. I had a ghost on my camera where I could see in my camera where his leg was broke, and it was swinging. And he told me his name was Randy. And I told him, I said, go to the light, let my angels take you there. He came across. Next day, the lady that we ghost hunted for her house, She had two mediums walk through there. One called me personally on the phone and said, Randy told me to tell you thank you because his leg is all better now that he crossed over. I mean, it's just, you know, and then the ones that are here, there's one downtown that his name is Colin, and he lives in the Redmond Dog Park, and he's been there for 50 years. Daughter passed away, but he's staying there. He doesn't like everybody down there messing with his, that's his property. He's going to stay, and he's going to protect what's his. They all have, and, you know, I've had a lot of humans come through, you know, to where you just got to shut them right off and not let them in.
Yeah. Kelly Brook is with us. He's a ghost hunter, a friend of mine in the Central Oregon area, owner of Shadow Chasers. You have a lot of details about some of these individual ghosts that you're mentioning, Kelly. How do you collect all that information? How do they communicate with you?
I have a lot of equipment. I go through a company in Salem, Oregon. He makes a lot of my ghost hunting equipment. He's a great guy. Ghost Stop is his name of his business. I have cameras. I have recorders. My favorite, you're going to laugh at this, but my favorite piece of equipment is my dowsing rods. I got two metal dowsing rods that I use. And
What rod? I'm sorry. It sounded like jousting, but that's not what you said.
Dowsing.
How's that spelled?
D-O-W-S-I-N-G.
Dowsting.
Kind of water sticks.
Is that right? That brings us to Henry, who you have mentioned is one of the ghosts that you have documented and named. Hanging outside of Redmond's Checkers pub there hanging out for some time. Tell us about Henry and how you discovered him and how you interact with that particular ghost.
Well, Henry and I, we've been hanging out for a while. He's a guy that's from 1920s. He's lived in Redmond in 1927. I got his picture. He's standing on a totem pole downtown, and what he did is he just watches people walk by. He sits there and listens to music, you know, he taps his foot and does that kind of thing. But what was funny about Henry was the night I was talking to him, a lady walked out of the Checkers bar and was standing there watching what I was doing. And the ghost will tell me things about people that aren't always good about people, but they know. I don't know how. I have so many stories about people almost getting divorced because the ghost will tell me something about one of their husband or their wife, you know. But this one here, he told me that she was cheating on her husband, and I asked her, and she said tonight was my first night. So, you know, Henry lives downtown. He watered the roads in the olden days, and I got his picture. He's a pretty cool looking guy. Yeah, I was downtown. Here's a good one for you. I was downtown at the Redmond Dog Park by myself, and there's a lady on the other side. And I had my recorder going. And what's weird about ghosts is if you're talking to a certain ghost, sometimes a third party will step in to the conversation and you know it's a totally different ghost. It's like if me and you were talking and somebody walked up and talked to you and their conversation would go somewhere else. Well, I was walking by this lady and it came through and it said hung and it said Brooklyn. And I thought it was a ghost from New York. It just totally changed. And the lady heard what I said and it was her daughter and she hung herself 3 years ago. And I said, well, she came through and she's standing here and she wants to talk to you. You know, that was pretty good one there.
You're a modern day ghostbuster sometimes. A lot of the homeowner or your clients or whoever they are, they want some satisfaction. They want relief. And they wouldn't be calling you if everything was fine. They're uncomfortable.
Right. Exactly. And a lot of times we'll find that, you know, I go there with total respect to the ghosts. I find out what they want. I don't go there to upset them. Just hear what they had to say and then go from there and we'll try to work out a situation where we can all live together and be.
What about those scary ghosts? Do they often get there, in your opinion, based on who they were as a human, how they died, and what are they like? Do they truly scare you and are they capable of bad things?
Oh, yeah. There was one ghost I did in Eugene at a friend of mine's house, and it was when I first started, and I was in this room, and come to find out, I said, if there's anything in here, show yourself. And it was a black head, and just like if you put a black stocking over your head, and I could see the eyes and the mouth and everything, but there was nothing there. And he turned and looked at me, and I looked at him, and I tell you what, it was about the scariest thing I've ever seen. But I know it's there now. I seen it. You know what I mean? He took off and he knocked a tree down like a twig and was gone. And come to find out, it was a lady that lived in the house. It was her ex-husband's ashes were in that room. And apparently he was a bad guy to the kids and mean and everything. And I found out that she had to take the ashes off the property, go have a nice ceremony for him somewhere and toss him. That's what she did. And he's never been back. Thank God for that.
Well, there you go. Mr. Kelly Brook from Redmond, Oregon, owner of Shadow Chasers. Again, you can email Kelly anytime you like at kbruck13@gmail.com. He's a great guy. I know he has a ton of passion about this stuff, and we appreciate his time. If you missed any of this conversation about ghosts, we have more at kxl.com. And happy Halloween, everyone. You have been listening to Beyond the Headlines, a behind-the-scenes look at some of this week's stories. You can follow me on Twitter at Brett Recamp. If you missed anything, the podcast is up at kxl.com, and you can download the show on iTunes or Google Play. Just look for Beyond the Headlines KXL. We now have 441 shows to choose from. For Alpha Media USA in downtown Portland, I'm Brett Recamp on FM News 101.
This has been Beyond the Headlines. In-depth interviews on topics of concern here in Portland and the Northwest. This has been a special presentation of Alpha Media.